Okay, anyway, I wanted to start out with a little interesting, I won't say philosophy, it's not the right word, basic Jewish hashgacha, not mussar, just a little interesting, I don't know what you call it exactly, machshava, and then get to a practical mussar vat. But it's important to know a little Jewish machshava too. There's a famous Rambam, one of the most famous Rambams in the whole Rambam, in Hilchos Tshuva, that the Rambam basically asks a question that how does it the coexist, the fact that Hashem knows the future and a person has Bechira Chavshis, right? In other words, it's really two questions. One is, Tom, how can Hashem know the future? It didn't happen yet, how can he know it? It's like humanly impossible, right? That's a pun, by the way, because it's not such a kasha, Hashem. It's humanly impossible, but okay. But it's humanly impossible. And if the Maisi does somehow know it, so then where's my Bechira? If Hashem knows yesterday what I'm going to do today, then obviously it was already decided. So then where's my Bechira today? Which is really the half that the Rambam is mostly focused on. So the Rambam gives an answer, very unclear what his answer is. Basically, the Rambam's answer seems to be is that we do not understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, can't ask Kasha. The Ravid gets very upset with the Rambam. He says you don't ask questions if you can't give a good answer, because you didn't, that's not the smart thing to do, to ask questions and then your answer doesn't. So he gives a different answer, and he himself says his answer is not such a good answer. Anyway, there's a general in the world says a basic answer, which is based on this week's parsha. So that's why I want to say it over and then use that as a springboard. It might be different. It's definitely not what the Ravid is saying. And it's pashas. It's a little different what the Rambam is saying, even though you could maybe fit it into the Rambam. It's a gra, and other people say it too. But it's not, they base it on different psukim in Parashas Breishis. The gra braises it on the pasuk, Breishis bara Elokim es haShamayim ves haaretz. You know the pasuk. So there's a difficulty if you know the first Rashi in the word Breishis. Rashi really should have said, Rishon, Rashis. The word Bereshis is a unclear word. It's not the, I'm not into grammar, I don't know, but it's not, it doesn't, we translate the first thing, but that's grammatically, you say Rishon, you know, there's other ways. We don't have the word Bereshis in the Chumash. So he says that Bereshis does not mean the first thing, but Bereshis is a noun. Very interesting. Bereshis is a noun. The Gra says it means Bereshis bara Elokim. Hashem created Bereshis. Right. What does that mean? Hashem created Bereshis. So the Gra says it means as follows, that there's such a thing. Bereshis means the concept of time, that there exists something which is first. Hashem created. Bereshis bara Elokim. Hashem created that there is a Bereshis, which means that the Gra says that in reality, in absolute truth, there's no such thing as time. Time is not a reality. Time was something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. The opening first thing that Hashem created at Sheshis Yemei Bereshis, which wasn't the beginning, maybe you'll say it was the beginning of time, I guess that's what would be a right description, but it wasn't the beginning of it. Hashem was around for way before that, right? But there was no concept of time. But came along Hashem, and the first thing he created was time. Now, once Hashem created time, so he made a law of nature, So we, who were created after Hashem created time, cannot envision, can't even comprehend a world without time, because we were created after Hashem made this law of nature. But like, Hashem isn't governed by the law of nature of time because he created it. So therefore, if you have a question, how can Hashem know the future? Well, as far as Hashem is concerned, there is no such thing as future, because there's no such thing as time.
Once he created time.
But there's no such thing. It's just it's he created it. He made it. But it's not, it's, for him, he's not governed by time.
Once you created, he's not governed by
it? No, he created it for you. He created it in the world. He created the world. So, in a sense, as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, there is no time. There's Hoya Vin Yinivra, you know, because there's no time. There's no such concept. It's a misnomer. How could Hashem know the future? Because there is no future. There is no past. There is no present. Those are all false terminologies. Those are terminologies that we have because we were created after. That's what the Gra based on the word Bereishis Barakim. Hashem created Bereishis. Bereishis, he says, is a noun. Other people put in the next pasuk in the Torah that Hashem caused by Yervi. Hashem created the Ma'iris, V'Yervi Boker Yom Rishon, and there that's where they said Hashem created time, because he made the sun and the moon, which create time, and because so our whole time is predicated on the sun and the moon, and this Ayervi Boker Yom Rishon is that's where he made time. But there are different people, but they're basing it on different psukim and brachos. But the general answer is similar, that Hashem created the concept of time. So it sounds like a little different than the Rambam. The Rambam says that we don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you can't ask a kasha because we don't understand Hashem. And the way the Gra is saying it is not so much we don't understand Hashem, is we don't understand the concept that time is not a reality. It's a little different. Now maybe that's what the Rambam meant. We don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not governed by time, but it doesn't sound exactly. Anyway, that's a very beautiful, I like that, because it answers the question. Now, why is hashkafik? Why is that important from a Musar point of view? Because it basically highlights a very important hashkafa, in which the Rambam is really saying, is that we cannot fathom for the life of us or at all anything about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We have a line in the Ani Mamnes, Ein lo guf, v'lo yasigu masigei guf, right? Which means that Hashem doesn't have a body, and we can't even understand. We can't lo yasigu, since we have a guf, we can't comprehend Hashem. So what does that mean? It means that people that ask questions, you can't ask questions, and you can't also claim to understand things. Hashkafically, we don't think that's right. People that ask questions. Why? I remember years ago, there was on Purim, there was a boy in the high school, maybe he was drunk, maybe he wasn't drunk. He came over to me, asked me, why did my father have to die? And I felt terrible, but we can't ask that question. Why did Hashem make my father? People in the Shoah, people that went through the Shoah, so many people became non-religious for the Shoah, because they had a tremendous kasha. Why is it that here, my father was a tzaddik, my mother was a tzaddik, the whole community was a tzaddik, there were definitely people that were tzaddikim, there were communities, Hasidic communities, Pittish communities that were tzaddikim, and the whole community were killed. There were tzaddikim that were killed. The Germans were these monsters, and they were on the top of the world, and they were having a ball, and they were torturing, not just killing, but torturing and torturing and torturing all these tzaddikim. It's a tremendous kasha. But the answer is, you can't ask a kasha, because if you dehear, the more you dehear, that the gap between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no shaykhes. We can't understand Eino Guf, Lo Yasigu Masiga Guf. Hashem's in a whole different realm. There's no there's no connection. So I got Yasa Kasha. Why did Hashem do this? How can you ask such a question? I once said over, I think what we're saying now is even stronger. But I said I once remember Rav Avraham, he said that it says in the beginning of Vayechi, it says that when Yaakov asked Yosef to bury him in Mitzrayim, in Eretz Canaan, he tells him about how he buried Rachel on the Derech, Kibros Avros. So Rashi says, what's one thing to do with the other? That happened 20, 30 years before. So why is Yaakov telling this to Yosef now? So Rashi says that Yaakov is telling Yosef, I know you're still upset with me that I buried your mother on the road. I could have, I wasn't even so far from Eretz Israel, and instead I buried her there on the road in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't even go to a normal base like Faris or whatever. I sure didn't go to Amara Samach Bela. And you have Tainiz. And then you say, chutzpah. He's asking me to schlep him all the way down from Mitzrayim to Eretz Canaan. And he couldn't move the 10 minutes, so to speak, to take Rachel, my mother, and bury her in a more normal place. So he says, you should know that I did it because Shem told me. Which means that really, logically, Yosef was walking around for 20, 30 years, I don't want to say fuming, but angry, upset. Nagla, chutzpah, why did you do that? Now, why did Hashem tell Yaakov to do that? So what does Rashi say?
Klaus wasn't passing by.
Because when Klai Israel were going to Golis, they're going to go out bus and they'll pass by Rachel's kever because it's on the road, and therefore they'll go by and Rachel will be mispada, and therefore it'll be good for Klai Israel, and it'll be good for Rachel, because Rachel will get a schus that she saved Klai Israel, and it, only Rachel, because Rachel had the special schus that she gave up the simanim, so because she gave up the simanim, so she has a special kayak to tfira, she couldn't, because she was mevater, so whatever. So now he says, Rav Avraham, he said, when did that happen? That Klai Israel went to Goddess? About 1,000 years later. From the time of Yosef and Yaakov. So, right, because there were 400 years in Mitzrayim, and the Bayis Rishon was 410 years, and there was a few hundred years before the Bayis Rishon was built, because, I don't know if there were 400 years in Mitzrayim, there were 210 years in Mitzrayim, in the Avdus. And then there was so it's around for 1,000 years. So he says, Hashem did something, which Yosef fought as a terrible tragedy. And the Torah says, well, yeah, because Hashem has a cheshbon. What's a cheshbon? Well, because in 1,000 years from now, it's going to be Nezek. You're supposed to figure that out. Because, but here, I'm saying, I think, even better than Rav Avrahami. Rav Avrahami is saying that a Kosh Baruch Hu could have a cheshbon in 1,000 years. So that shows that we could also understand it if we knew what was going to be in 1,000 years. Except that we're limited, we don't know the future. So we can't understand Hashem because we don't understand the future. I'm saying even better. It's not just that we don't understand the future. It's B'chlau, because Baruch Hu is in a different orbit. Hashem thinks different. He's not our... We can't comprehend HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of thinking. We don't understand it. He's way beyond us. We understand this means Hashem... this is just a mashal. This is just one example that Hashem doesn't have a future, doesn't have a present, doesn't have... It's a whole different... So you can't ask the kashas on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashkafically, when people... Something happens. A guy goes ahead and does something, and then later something happens. He says, oh, I'm getting punished because I did this and this. So it's not healthy to do that, because even though you're giving the impression to yourself, right? There are people that do this, but I think we all this hashkafically not a good idea. There's a guy's mechadel Shabbos, And in this city, there's a Chilul Shabbos, and there's a fire in that city. Oh, you know why there's a fire in that city? Because there's Chilul Shabbos there. Right? Or, you know, that's very dangerous, because you're giving the impression to yourself that you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know why things happen. So then, when Chas V'Shalom, there's a fire to a tzaddik, then you're stuck. Huh? Now, why'd that happen? You know, when you go ahead and you think, when you go ahead and explain things and with answers which are very short-sighted, because we don't think about 1,000 years. We only think about a minute, you know. So then we're training ourselves to believe that we understand why Hashem does what He does, and then you can set yourself up for when you're going to get into Akasha. What I did hear, and also Rabbi Avraham said, is that there are times when it's blatantly nicker mida kenega mida, then you're allowed to say, "Oh, this is why it happened." He gave an example that there was in World War I, the Mir Yeshiva was running away from the Mir, because they had to run away because of the war from the, and they ran to some city. They were refugees. They had nowhere to stay. So where did the yeshiva guys go? They had nowhere to go. They went into a shul, and they learned and slept in the shul. They had nowhere to go. And there was a gabbai who was in charge of that shul. And of course, you know, this is somewhat, you know, okay, I don't want to say typical, but certain people, that he only thinks about his perspective, they're getting the shul dirty. Oh, you know? So he basically kicked them out of the shul, you know? The toilets are getting stuffed because, you know, the overuse of the toilet, you know? So he kicked them out of the shul. So Rav Chatz goes like, you know, we're in the middle of a war. These guys have nowhere to sleep, nowhere to go, not just nowhere to learn, you know? And the yeshiva guys, they have nothing. They have no parents, no family, no. Well, you're worried about, well, the shul's getting dirty because there's too much wear and tear on the shul. So he kicked up. So he was like, years later, this gabbai died during Yontif in shul. And Yontif, you want to say, you have the duchen. It's very important. They had a duchen on Yontif. But you can't duchen if there's a mace in the shul, because the kohenim can't be in the shul when there's a mace. So what do you do? What halacha we have to do? You have to take the mace out of the shul. But the mace is muksa. So what do? Right? Basically, you have to use tiltum and atzad or kicking. It's brought to halacha. We have to basically shove somehow or another the dead body out of the shul in a tiltum and atzad, take away, or with your feet. Yeah, that's the halacha. What? That's the halacha, because in order to that thing duchen, and we, that's doicha, the covet of the mace, and we somehow move the mace out of the shul, and we can't move it with our hands because that's muksa. Mace is muksa. So basically, he was kicked out of the shul. So Rav Yerucham said, that was nicker mida kenega mida. He kicked the yeshiva guys out of the shul, and Hashem made it that he should be kicked out of the shul. Okay. She said, there you're allowed, because if it's clearly mida kenega mida, so you're allowed to say, you can't say for sure, but you can say that mistama, that's pshat. But when things are not clearly mida kenega mida, you can't say, it's wrong. You can't say this is why something happened. And therefore, it's very dangerous. Right? I've said this many times, I'm sure many people heard this already, that there was a guy, it's a true story, but it's one of my favorite stories, I got to say it again, that there was, when I was in Israel, there was a Rebbe there, so yeshiva went to Sfas, and then we on Thursday and Friday, before we went to Sfas, we went to Amuka. Amuka is Kavod Rav Yonasan Ben Uziel, which is the most mesugal place to daven for a shidduch. And they, at those days, now they made it differently to make it better. But in those days, the road to the kever itself, they divided one side for men and one side for women. But the walk to the kever, the men and women walk together, and then they split up. Now they have a mechitza the whole way. But okay. So he walks into the men's section, and he's davening, and he says he comes to me Shabbos, he's all shooken up. He says, what happened? He says, he davened, he's about to start Shaduchim. And he was, someone read to him a certain girl. He was from Los Angeles, and someone read to him a girl from Los Angeles that he knew and is learning in seminary, and he knew from his past. And he thought about it, and he said, no, I know that girl, she's not frum enough for me. Nothing to talk about. This guy said, what do you mean? Yeah, she's frum, she went to seminary, she changed. No, he said, no, I know her. I gotta do better, you know? Okay. Says he's davening at Amuga. He says, I never daven Shein Gamayel, daven with much kavana. Says, I walk out of Amuga after this amazing tefillah, and who do I meet walking out of the ladies section, also with amazing kavana? That girl. She says, it's mamish simim in a shamayim, as is bashert. So he said, of course it's bashert. It's bashert. Hashem wanted to give you an isayin. We don't understand why things happen. You got, because it happened, it means I should marry her. Chas v'shalom. You say that this girl is not, she's not frum enough for you. Of course you shouldn't marry her. What?
Who said that it's Bashar? That's an Isaiah?
Me. Obviously. The girl's not frum enough for him. Why shouldn't he supposed to marry her? Supposed to marry her because she fell down from Shemayim. You know, so you can't use... You have to know, we don't understand why things happen. And it's very, very dangerous when people start to try and either question, why did these people in the Shoah die? Why did this happen? You're creating tremendous nisyanus for yourself. Okay, and I don't want to get paranoid. This was only an introduction. So the first point is that we have to start out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a different realm. Totally. And there's no way that we can fathom why Hashem does what he does. So if it's clear to Midik like Amida, and the Chazal say there's such thing as Midik like Amida, okay, maybe. If Chazal tell us, you know, okay. But if there's no Chazal, don't tell us, then we don't know. See, why did the Shoah happen? I don't know. Period. Why did someone die? I don't know. Why did this happen? I broke my foot? I don't know. Because it gets very... Because for the odds that your possible reasons are right are probably very slight. And you're giving yourself the impression that you might be able to understand Hashem. And it's very likely you can understand Hashem. And that's also very unhealthy. Because then this guy is going to say the possible reason that I met this girl walking out of Amuka is because I'm supposed to marry her. And millions of other examples. I was going to do a mitzvah and I slipped on a banana peel and I broke my leg. So it's a sign in a shamayim that I shouldn't be doing this mitzvah. Right? Obviously, I was running to do the mitzvah and I slipped on the floor and I broke my leg. What could be more clear indication? Right, Avram Avinu was running to do the Akedah, not the Akedah, he wanted to shech the aisle. And what happened? What happened? It's a little bit the opposite, but what? The aisle, where they? The aisle gets stuck, and the aisle was coming to him. And instead of the aisle gets stuck in thorns. I don't think it's so common that aisles get themselves tied up in thorns, and they know. But see, if I was out of here, I would say, listen, obviously Hashem doesn't want me to shuck the aisle. Look at this. His father is about to come. And instead, all of a sudden, the aisle gets, you know, and a naze happens that the aisle can't come. Right? But that's, you know, we don't do things like that. Okay, anyway. What's my main point? I'm not sure if I have time to my point, but the next point that I want, which was the point I think is more important, this is Pashut. I don't think people have so much any problem with this. But the next point is the same thing. We have to hear that just like we understand that, obviously, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now, you know, listen, we can't understand. There is sometimes The problem why people don't do that with Hashem is because it's a certain gaiva. It takes a certain anivis to admit that I don't understand things. And people are very gaiva. I think that's what the problem is. So on a much, you know, and I have the alpha havdalas, you have the same problem with people. Meaning, right? You have a person, you know, and I'll give you an example. Right? I gave this example also many times. There was a guy in my father's shul who was totally tone deaf. Right? Totally tone deaf. So he used to sing, and it was comical. Because he was totally tone deaf, so he was basically squeaking away, and you know, right? But he is totally doesn't know that he's tone deaf because he doesn't know that he's squeaking away because he's tone deaf. So he convinced himself that he's the world's greatest chazan because he, in his mind, him and the world's greatest chazan will sound exactly the same. So he used to insist to get up to Davin and to do Chazanis. And of course, all the other Ba'abatim were a bunch of Leitzim. So they used to encourage him and tell him, yeah, you're great, Davin, make sure you do Chazanis. And it was, okay, right? So now, that we understand. But what if you have a guy who really is musical? I am very musical. Right? I'm a musician. I play music all day. I play... But you have to hear that if you're going to play your music and there's going to be a professional musician here, he is going to hold his ears. Right? You think it's beautiful, right? And you think that you're just as good as that musician. But that's because the guy by him, you're also tone deaf, right? Because he spent 50 years working on music. So his ear is developed so that even though you might be the best musician in the yeshiva and you play in the yeshiva band and you've practiced for 20 years and you're always a singer and you're the chazan, and but for a guy who's a bigger mumcha, right, you're squeaking away. Ooh. stop, right?
So we start in terms of when Rabbeim make decisions.
How'd you figure that out? But I'm not necessarily talking Rabbeim, no, because I'm not talking about Das Torah. I'm talking about just a general realization of a certain humbleness. See, your Rabbeim is, he gets, okay, he's a Rebbe. Not necessarily because he's a Rebbe. That the humbleness to realize that there are people who are better than you in certain areas, and even though I cannot hear why what you're singing is any better than what I'm singing. I don't hear the difference, right? I remember, because I had a very bad ear, still have a bad ear, but I had a very bad ear for sounds when I was young. I used to have to go to speech lessons, and I remember there were sounds I just couldn't hear. And imagine I'm trying to learn my bar mitzvah parsha, and there was my brother who was trying to teach me, would correct me. You made a mistake. And what's a mistake? You said this, and it's this. It's the same thing. You know, I get so angry at him. You know, he's driving me crazy. Because, you know, it's the same thing, right? It's all the same. What did I say? That's what I said. No, you said this, and really this. You know, I'm going to punch him in the nose. Right? Because if you're tone deaf, so you have to have a certain amount of emuna that obviously my brother's not out to torture me. That means that I can't hear the difference. So there are people in the world. It's an important thing because I see many people don't have this understanding. I mean, there are people in the world who are expertise in their areas of expertise. Now, that doesn't mean that every person who puts out a sign that he's an expert is an expert. There are many people who put out signs that they are experts and they are not experts. And that's where it gets tricky. And just because a guy has fancy degrees doesn't necessarily mean that he's an expert, because fancy degrees just means he went to school and you passed the test. And to be an expert, you have to have a certain chush and common sense and sensitivity. But there are people who do have that, and they really are in their areas, they do are. And how do you know? I don't know, because maybe because other people who are also expertise seem to agree that they are. So there is something about sometimes being mevatel your death. You know, I don't hear it. Not to get so stubborn. I don't hear it. I don't. You're crazy. That's exactly like I went out to mamas kill my brother more than once because he drove me tortured. Eventually, got myself a different teacher. It didn't work, you know. But because you can't. So it's the same thing. In other words, let's say I consider myself a very good understanding of people. Let's say. And I think that I'm very observant and I understand people. Now comes along, I'm speaking to somebody who, and he tells me, I don't hear that. Well, he said, well, you just insulted him. I said, what are you talking about? He says, yeah, that's insulting. I said, well, why is that insulting? So sometimes you got to be mevato. It's not a question, I'm not even bringing him because he's a gadol and das Torah, you know. Leaving out the concept of gadol and das, which is another topic, which if we have time, we'll get to. But there's just certain people who are expertise in certain areas. So there is a inyan in life of finding out what people are expertise in what areas. You know, and there are people. Rabbi Gita is an expert in certain areas. Rabbi Balka is an expert in certain areas. Rabbi Harris is an expert in certain areas. Right? Different people are experts in certain areas. I'm not saying everybody is an expert in every area, but there people have expertise. They have expertise. Sometimes it's because of years and years of training, and very often it is inborn, and it's natural, and they have certain natural talents. And just like a person who is naturally musical, right? The guy who there's certain people, they say Beethoven, or was only 3 years old, he was probably making up music, you know? So there's certain natural inborn talents. You know, I tell the guys this story. I tell this many times. But okay, we got time. So, I wanted to go into Das Torah, but I don't think I'm going to get to there. So we'll stick to this time. I told the guys many times this story that when the Reshiva, the Tzal, they say, Reshiva used to give people advice, certain things. He felt very strongly that one of the big problems why people don't take advice is because they don't believe that you really understand them. When a person has a very serious problem, so there's a human nature that people think that they're the only person in the world that has that problem. And therefore, when you give them advice, they feel that they won't listen to your advice because you didn't understand them. And they have a riot that you didn't understand them. The biggest riot is because you gave them advice. And deep down, they feel that their problem is hopeless. So the fact that you could actually tell them that there's a solution to their problem is a proof that you didn't understand their problem. Very often, there's another reason, there's a reason to seem to understand the problem, because the guy was embarrassed. He couldn't verbalize his problem because he's too embarrassed. So he just assumes that Reshiva did not understand his problem, so then he's not going to follow his advice. So the Reshiva said, the first thing you have to do before giving the guy advice is you have to prove to him that you understand his problem. So how do they used to prove to the guy? I'm not talking about a simple problem, you know, but something obviously complex. So how would you prove that they understand this problem? So what they say, the guys used to say, what the Reshiva does is he would tell the person things about himself that he never told anyone, certain of his biggest secrets. You know, said, you do this and this, and you do this and this, and the guy would be like, how did Reshiva know that? You know, I never told anyone, that's a secret. And then after he would spook the guy out that he understood him, then he would give him his advice. So I once asked the Reshiva, like, how did he do that? Like how do you go ahead, you know, and, you know, tell the person, you do this and this, you know, what if you're wrong? You know, you just make it up. Like, how did you know? So Reshiva told me, you know, elementary. He said basically there are only like 4 or 5 different types of people. And I asked like the guy a very, you know, he thinks it's just schmoozing with him. You know, a question, oh, what are you doing? What did you do in Chayim Malin? You know? But the answer to that question, whatever, you know, I don't know, I see maybe it doesn't, wasn't that question, indicates what type of person he is in those 5 categories. And then once I know which one of that category, of that category, there are 5 subcategories. So I ask him another question, and then I, oh, so you're that category, yeah. And then I ask him another question, and he says, after 5 or 6 questions, I know everything about this guy. I can tell you his whole life story. Especially, he also told me certain information, you know, because he came in with his problems. So he takes the information he told me, and I figured out his whole personality. So, of course, I know everything. I can tell you everything about the guy. You know, it's obvious. So I asked Rashiva, you know, if he could teach me how to do that. So he basically gave me this great answer that either you have it or you don't. You know, like, forget it. You know, you don't have it, you can't do it. Which I did not get insulted because I don't have it. That to do that, you can't teach someone that. Right? You have to. Either you got it or you don't. That's what he told me. Either you got it or you don't. You can't teach that. So there are certain people, but it's not. It's in every different area. You know, there are areas in learning. There are areas in Musar. There are areas in Hashkafa. There's areas in understanding people, in sensitivity. There are areas in Pichlis. There's areas in advice in business. I don't know, you know. Different areas, you know, there is in being a car mechanic. Different people have expertise in different areas. And the fact that I don't get it, and I'm insistent, and I get this in shir sometimes. It drives me crazy, right? That's not the purpose of this night. But since I'm running early, because I don't want to go to the next topic. So, right, again in shir. You have a guy that says a pshat. And I try and explain to him why his pshat isn't right. And he said, well, because it doesn't fit into the lashon. Why not? I think it fits into the lashon. Okay, what can I do for you? I can't help it. You know, a little more experience than, you know, but the certain people, it doesn't mean they can't keep it. It doesn't mean I never make a mistake. I make lots of mistakes, especially because whatever, because, very often I'm not as prepared as the guys, and I do that, you know, on purpose sometimes, and I do make mistakes, and the guys do say things that are correct and good points, and I'm not saying they never say, no, chas v'shalom, but sometimes, there have to be, that when the Rebbe tells you that, no, I'm sorry, dab shot, it can be.
Is the code word for that Adoni?
Don't try and sound smart. No, but could be. I don't know. I'll have to figure out now. But sometimes it's the guy is just. You have to hear that the probability is that the person has a little bit more, you know, experience, talent, natural. Now, does that mean that everybody? Doesn't mean everybody. There are. You know. Theoretically, you can have a 17-year-old kid, not kid, you know, guy who can have a rebbe, and maybe he can be right, and the rebbe's wrong. You know, it depends. That might not be the, you know, different rebbeim have different expertise. That might not be the rebbe's greatest expertise, and I'm not saying, but you have to go ahead and know in the world who, when you're dealing with people, you have to know what their expertise are and then take advantage. There's such a bracha to take advantage of people's expertise. I know that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, we have in the yeshiva here, I really do think without that we really have some extremely talented people in this yeshiva. who are really experts, you know, unusual in certain areas. Now, does it mean they're experts in every area? No. But in their areas, they are very impressive. You know, they're chadim b'dairas. And if you speak to them, and it pays to speak to them in their area. It's pay, and if you don't get it, it pays to work on it. And not just to say, well, I think differently, you know. There's it's an opportunity to, and it's the same thing in life in general. You know, the different people. You know, Rabbi Trapper had his expertise, and you know, Rabbi David Chait has his expertise, and Rabbi Samuel has his expertise, and you know, I'm just mentioning the people in Yeshiva, but there are other people, you know, in the world too. There's, you know, there's different people. You know, an English teacher might have his expertise that he knows in proper writing, that it sounds good writing, and how to make a sentence that sounds, you know, that flows and sounds good, beautiful. And, you know, to me, it sounds right. This is how you write. Yeah, but, you know, you're a Chinaman. You know, you don't have a sense of music in a poetic ear to hear the poetry of the language. So there are certain people that are right in every area. Anyway, I wanted to get onto that last, because this is what I'll bring down to, but even at that. But it's a, you know, there's a 2 points I was trying to make. Is one, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the cloud, we have to go ahead. We can't try even, it's, I think it's healthier when we hear, we can't understand Hashem. I don't think we should even try, usually, say, you know, like you said, maybe this might happen, because it's, we can say, can I daven? So that's when maybe that, and because that it says that davening can cause it. But okay, that I think you can say maybe that could be my tefillahs did it, helped. But otherwise, but some to say that, you know, I broke my leg. You know why I broke my leg? Because yesterday I spoke Lashon Hara. Yesterday I spoke Lashon Hara. That's why I broke my leg. You know, Hashem is, when Hashem's where you think you're so small-minded. You can only think of yesterday. What about the Lashon Hara you spoke a month ago? What about the Aver you did 10 years ago? Yeah, what? It works. It works. God promised. Hashem made it happen. If I broke my leg, Hashem made it happen. But Hashem doesn't just remember the fact that I spoke Lashon Hara yesterday. Hashem remembers that Avera that I did, I don't know how old you are, but I would say 50 years ago. You can't help me, right? But in sense, right? So, but that's what it says. And Bracious, the Kai, Ubo Kai, Hashem remembered the very that his grandparents did. So, you know, like, you know, you can't keep it, or because of what's going to be in 50 years in the future. So, if we're so little, we only think about we only remember yesterday's Lashon Hara. Oh, it must be because I spoke Lashon Hara yesterday. That's absurd. Anyway, so when it comes to Hashem, we have to really forget it. And this, Elif Havdalis, we have to hear that there are certain people that there's a tremendous gift that we have to learn from. But many people don't learn from them because they're too argumentative and they're too much gaiva. And they're not ready to accept that person might be an expertise in this area. I admit it's dangerous, because I'm not saying everybody's an expert who claims to be an expert. There are people who claim to be experts who are not experts. And they're not at all. I know that from experience. There are people, and there are people that, because they claim to be experts, that other people think they're experts because they claim to be experts. And that's also very common too. But what?
How do you know if it's Gaiva or?
Yeah, okay, I know. I don't
how
know.
How do you recognize these talents in people?
Sometimes the fact that other people, I used to ask Rashiva the question, how do you know if a person, how do you know who the real Gedolim are? You know, I want to go learn by a Rebbe. I might know who the real Gadol. You know, I'm a 17-year-old Bachra. I don't know who a Gadol is. So this guy, he looks, sounds very impressive. Maybe he's saying Krum Divrei Torah, you know? So, I remember Shiva used to say that the fact that a person has an extremely popular shir is no raya that he's saying good Torah. And he said, if anything, it's probably a raya a little bit the other way. Because it was really, because most people can't appreciate good Torah. So he probably means that he's saying things that are, you know, they're not a sugar candy in there. So, you know, but not the real stuff. The real stuff is too hard for most people to get. So how do you know if he's a big gadol? So you have to listen to other gadolim. So you know, you go, you know, there's, you know, like if Chavetz Chaim said he's a gadol. Chavetz Chaim, and then the person the Chavetz Chaim said a gadol, he said, you know, like you have to take reliable, you know, people, you know, there's the people in the world who are in the know, not because a guy self-proclaims himself to be a Rosh Hashiva or a gadol or an expert in this area, or a guy put out a thing, I give marriage advice, you know. But people who are experts in that area will recommend him, and they will advise you, and you know, and that person who's advising you, he was, you know, so then you can sort of know. Okay, shikayat.